Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hi there, my name is Brianna Contreras and I'm Associate Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. In today's episode, I chatted with Daniel Drake, President and CEO of Trinity Health PACE, or Programs of All-Inclusive Care for the Elderly. Dan and I discussed the specifics of how PACE programs have grown in recent years, the outlook for these programs in the future, and how PACE is benefiting older patients' well-being and their healthcare costs. Hi, Dan. How are you doing today?
I am well. How are you?
I'm lovely. Happy to be speaking with you and meeting with you over Zoom. And thank you, for taking the time to chat with me for an episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No problem. So to get started, I wanted to take a look at, PACE programs. So for those who aren't familiar with programs of all-inclusive care for the elderly, or PACE, as I said, programs, could you describe these programs? For example, what's the purpose? Who pays for them? How many of them are there? How many are there? And then how many people do they serve, possibly?
Okay, great. Yeah. Basically, I'm the president and CEO of Trinity Health PACE, and we're the largest provider of non-for-profit PACE care in the United States. PACE is a program that provides comprehensive medical and social services to certain frail community-dwelling elderly individuals that are nursing facility eligible. So in the past, they would be in a nursing home, but now, thanks to the funding for community and home-based programs, we can care for people at home where they like to be, most of whom in the program are Medicare and Medicaid eligible. We call that dual eligibility. They are cared for an interdisciplinary team of healthcare providers that coordinate their care at home. And, I won't go into too much, but, it's primary care physicians, nurses, physical therapists, mental health providers, social workers. It's an array of people in there. Right now in the United States, there are approximately, and this changes every day, thank God, because we have so many new programs opening, so we can increase the access to care. We have 140 programs in 30 states, and it's serving approximately 57,000 participants. And, we serve those from 55 who are older, that are nursing facility eligible, and are normally at the poverty level, Medicaid level. We do have a part of our program. If you want to join the program, pay privately, you're allowed to also, but it is funded by the state that you're located in, and the federal government. So it's Medicaid and Medicare. I hope I answered that one.
Oh, yeah, it's perfect. Thank you. Now, have the PACE programs been studied in a formal way? In other words, is there any peer review evidence about whether they're achieving their purpose?
Yes. And in fact, terrific results we've been getting. PACE has been around for over 30 years in numerous states. As you know, the 30 states, we operate Trinity Health PACE in 9 of those states. There have been over 100 peer review articles, and you can go to the National PACE Association website, and they are there, those 100 articles. And it shows how we reduce readmissions, reduce admissions to hospitals, how the care is received much better by participants. We call our patients participants and their family, because the care is delivered at their home or in one of our PACE centers. So they don't have to live in a congregate housing settings such as a nursing home or assisted living. And as we saw during COVID, it's safer at home. You're much safer to be cared for in a home and community-based setting than you are in congregate living right now.
Right. Thank you. Now, to kind of piggyback on, you mentioning Trinity's PACE program. So are you able to share some details about the size and staffing of the Trinity PACE program? And is Trinity typical of the PACE programs?
Absolutely. We have 13 programs and 18 centers in 9 states. We serve over 3,000 participants and have our employees, we call them colleagues, our colleagues. We have approximately 1,200 colleagues. And one of the most important things for us, of course, participant care and satisfaction is colleague satisfaction. So we monitor that also. We want to be the provider of choice for our participants, and we want to be the employer of choice. So it is funny. We work in 9 different states, so we have 9 regulatory bodies that are quite different in each state, plus the Medicare CMS surveys.
Okay, thank
That's a
you.
little bit about us.
Okay, got it. Now, are the PACE programs designed to reduce the cost of long-term care? And if so, how?
Yes. PACE is designed to serve, participants in the home and community setting, thus reducing costs for the state and federal government. For nursing homes, I'll just give you an example. They pay for 24-hour care in a nursing home setting. So the bricks and mortars cost money, of course, because you have to fund that. With us, we have our centers, but we give care in the home, in the center, and outside. Plus, we are a capitated program, which means we receive one capitated rate per month from the state and from Medicare. So, it's 100% risk-based business for us. When the state and federal government do their budget, they love our type of program because they pay us one amount regardless of the care we provide. So if we have a person in our program that goes to a nursing home or goes to the hospital that month, we still get the same payment. We've received the same payment. So it really helps the state and federal government with their budgeting, because they know in advance every month what they're going to pay to the PACE programs.
Okay, great. Now, to kind of piggyback off of that, do PACE programs make long-term care more affordable for seniors so they don't have to spend down their assets or sell their homes to pay for their care?
No, that's basically the same. If you have assets or you have a substantial pension or savings, you can pay privately for this program until you do spend down, and then it's very similar to a nursing home or any type of other assisted living program that takes Medicare and Medicaid.
Got it. Now you mentioned COVID earlier in the conversation.
Yeah.
Now, how has the pandemic affected PACE programs? As you know, people are more reluctant than ever to get care in long-term facilities, right? So has that put
Absolutely.
pressure on PACE programs?
It's actually highlighted our program over, congregate housing type programs. And Asia, who is one of our communications directors, will tell you, we are looking at one of our slogans has always been safer at home. And we do believe that. And most people want to have their care delivered in their home setting. They don't want to move into a nursing home where they don't have any say of who their roommate is, when they can go to bed, when they're going to eat. So COVID has really highlighted our program, and we have increased our enrollment because of that, where participants plus their family members want their mother, father, aunt, uncle to be in home so they can come and visit. They might be masked and vaccinated, but they can actually visit. During the height of COVID, unfortunately, you couldn't just go to a nursing home or assisted living and visit. So it has definitely highlighted, what our program provides. The other thing, though, is, we had to pivot drastically with the way we provide care because our center of care was our life center. And we had to pivot and start, looking at innovative ways, technology, and home health to provide the care for our participants. And we were able to do that since we have such a resilient workforce and excellent leaders.
All right, great to hear. Now I wanted to continue on with that topic. So how did COVID affect maybe any staffing challenges? I know some nursing homes are struggling to find employees, so I don't know if that kind of is the same thing at more like at home care or.
Yeah, we're starting to see that now. We didn't see it during the pandemic. The biggest part of the pandemic, we had staffing, everything was fine with that. But now coming out of the pandemic, we are starting to see that In a couple of our areas, Amazon has opened big warehouses and they're paying their drivers a lot more than we pay. Because again, we're a Medicaid, Medicare program. We don't have, we're not, we're a non-for-profit. We don't have private equity behind us. So we're starting to see that where some of the caregivers, some of the drivers, and even some of the nursing staff are looking at other opportunities that pay higher. But we do have very dedicated colleagues, and our retention rate's extremely high because they really love what they do, providing care for the frail elderly in their own community. Most of our colleagues live in the community where they work. So they're providing care for the elderly that sometimes they've known since they were a child. And it's really pretty cool when you look at that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And actually, I had another question that kind of just popped up in my head.
Absolutely.
How are PACE programs more so in like rural areas?
In rural areas, it's a little tougher because you don't have the density. And one of our regulations, well, it's a rule that's pretty loosely, it's loosely enforced because of rural areas, that you shouldn't be on a transportation van for more than 30, 35 minutes. So it's a little harder to deliver in those type of areas. But hey, we have a great program, and if a state comes to us and says, we'd like you to provide service here, we'll do that to the best of our ability. And it's really is just access to care, with the rural areas. We would love to provide the services. And I'll go back to the state of Pennsylvania. The state of Pennsylvania reached out to us. They have a deaf community that was losing funding. This was a few years back. And they reached out to us and said, "Hey, can you service, these participants in your program because their funding's going away?" We absorbed them. We had never done anything like that before, and it's been a great success.
Well, I have one more question then, actually. So Senator Casey of Pennsylvania has introduced the PACE Plus Act to improve access to PACE programs. However, it seems like it would involve a relatively minor amount of money. Maybe about 30 million and 2 million for state expansion, I'm sorry, expansion grants. So can you comment on that?
First of all, Senator Casey and the entire state of Pennsylvania have been strong supporters of PACE for over 25 years. I've been working in PACE for about 15 years, and really it's a state that is very friendly to PACE, and the funding is actually good. So this would help. The money would be very valuable. Any type of increase in funding would be fantastic. And I think you're probably aware in President Biden's infrastructure plan, they look at home and community-based programming such as ours, and it's built into the infrastructure. So we're really excited about that. There will be more funding from the federal level, which always trickles down to the state level. And I go back to, they have seen during COVID that this type of program and other home and community-based programs are the programs that first provide the best care during a pandemic, the safest care during a pandemic, and where do you want to live? I always look at that. If somebody said to you, when you grow old, do you want to live in your home, in your community that you've always lived in, or do you want to live in congregate housing? And I teach a college level course, and the first class I ask everybody, it's a healthcare course, when you get old, raise your hand if you want to live in a nursing home. And nobody raises their hand. They all look at
God.
me. And then I always say, yeah, nursing homes are there for a purpose. We need nursing homes. I'm not trying to be negative about that. But if you have the structure and the capability to live in your own home, and we can provide care and transportation to your appointments, make sure that you're getting socialization with other elderly people your age, wouldn't you prefer to live at home? I mean, I think it's a pretty simple choice, a choice that I would love to have when I'm older. And that's why, Trinity, we have a really strong growth plan. We opened a program in Newark, Delaware during the pandemic, which, people said we were crazy, but, people signed up and it's doing very well. And we're able to serve more participants who in the past would have to either stay at home with no services or go into a nursing home. And this summer of 2022, I'm looking forward to next year, we're opening a site in Woodland, Pennsylvania. And we have plans for a site in Pensacola and some other states, because other states are looking at this and saying, wow, this is a great way to care for our seniors. The state of Maryland, the state of Illinois, and the state of Louisiana have all opened up for bids for providers such as ourselves to go in and create a program to serve more participants and just, you know, as you said earlier, drive down some of the expenses of long-term care by, you know, having us serve for people in a risk-based business for the owner of the business. So our goal is to keep people happy and healthy at home. And that comes into the funding. I mean, the better care we give people, the less likely they are to have to be hospitalized or, you know, go to the ER.
Right. That's great. And it's great to hear again how much PACE programs are expanding in so many other states and so many other areas. And especially kind of like you said, after COVID, I think that it brought a lot of people at least more aware of the importance of it.
We've always known that, you know, we are the best program that we should be in a home and community-based setting. And we have to figure out how to deliver the care to each participant instead of everybody being in congregate housing. You know, I go back to there's nothing wrong with nursing homes. They're there for a reason. A lot of our participants who end up going to nursing homes go because they don't have housing, affordable housing. And that's something we really look at when we open a new site. We want to partner with senior housing and other housing, safe housing for our participants. And the other thing is you have to have some sort of a support group to live at home.
If there's anything else that you'd actually like to share that I didn't cover, I know that's all I have for you. But again, if you'd like to share anything else.
Yeah, I just, you know, I am just so happy that you invited us because I think people are unaware of our program. And the more awareness that we, you know, that we get, it's wonderful for us. And it's a fantastic program. It really is. And we, you know, anybody who listens to this, we'd love to, once COVID is over and we're free to have tours at our centers, we would love for somebody to come out to one of our centers and take a tour. We have legislative leaders constantly calling us saying, hey, we'd like to come out, because this is kind of new to them. When you think about the whole program being 30 years old in the United States, that's relatively new. Everybody knows about nursing homes. Mm-hmm. They don't all know about home and community-based services because their grandparents or parents did not engage in a program such as this. So the visibility is greatly appreciated. And, you know, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.